Please join me in welcoming back to Vox Novus, Dave Emmons. Hi, Dave. Welcome.
The new voice.
Hi, Victor. And so Vox nice to hear your Novus. Voice again. Victor, the voice firm. And I love your voice. I was just telling you earlier off the air that, wow, you can do these audiobooks. I mean, like I said, you sound like an English literature.
Our rapidly changing world.
My name is Victor Furman. You know, reading
Welcome to Vox Novus, the new
voice. You should be doing a lot of that, and because you read a chapter off of my book, first book, they, and I listened to that and I said, I didn't know I could write that good. You made my writing sound good.
well, Dave, it was easy for me to take your inspired words and bring them to voice. Thank you, Victor. Dave, for our listeners meeting you for the first time, please share a little about your early life, your family, and where and how you grew up.
Okay. I grew up in a small town, Alton, Illinois. It's actually famous for a lot of ghost haunted places. But my life started off, I had 10 siblings. I had two sisters and eight brothers. And I was the ninth brother, 11 in all. And we grew up in a blue collar, not so rich family, of course. But we had simple life. We made a toy out of a cardboard box. And so we played with cardboard a lot, and we didn't have computers or anything. I started off having my first UFO encounter when I was 13, and then in 14 with a good buddy of mine, in which I saw him just last night at a party. So we're still connected and we talk about it. After that sighting, of course, I finished high school, and I went to work for a short while. And we were talking about me joining, why I joined the military. Well, I was actually joining, to tell you the truth, our high school, turned in my brother Jack and I because they said we were too poor to go to college. So they told our draft board, the county draft board, to nab us up. So they told us that we were on schedule to be, drafted. So what we did is we signed up in order to get the school of our choice 3 or 4 months before they drafted us. So, and that's what I did. I joined up with my brother on a buddy plan. We went to basic training together. He went his way for training in Fort Dix, and I went my way in training at Arsenal. I was into nuclear weapons technology, and I had top secret clearance. I got out of that because I couldn't handle it. I didn't like talking to military intelligence people every Saturday. It was kind of like, for me, I was only 19 or 20, just turned 20. And I was in a class. All these guys had master's degrees and bachelor's degree. And I was one of the only high school guys in the class. There's only about 14 of us in that class. So I was I thought, okay, why am I here? And I tested really high on the entrance exam in the military. And so they told me I could choose anything I wanted. I could have went to Officer Canada school. I don't know why I chose nuclear weapons. I just thought that was exciting, but I found out I didn't like it. I didn't want to end up in Sandia, New Mexico, underground. And that's what's going on right now, a lot of underground work, and which has been going on for years. But so I didn't want to do that. So I put myself up for grabs. My brother, he was married. His wife was going to have a baby. And he got orders for Vietnam. I told my captain, I said, sir, I said, I want to stop his orders because only one family member can serve in Vietnam back then. Only, if you wanted to, both of these could serve, but you could actually knock one brother out from going. So that's what I did. I took my orders and I got the orders. The captain said, okay, I'd like for you to stay here, run the control room and everything. I said, no, sir. I said, let me go. I'll grow up and go to Vietnam. My brother's got orders. I went for him. So I went to Vietnam, and I was a combat soldier, a sergeant, platoon sergeant, actually utilized as a lieutenant, to tell you the truth. And in my book, I talk about that. I was in charge of 42 guys. I had some encounters, and it's in this book, Senseless Wars and Conflicts, A Combat Veteran's Perspective, is what this book is about. And my first book, of course, What Do They Want? It was about my UFO encounters. But this book here, Senseless Wars, when I was in Vietnam, I was in charge of 42 guys. two lieutenants bothered me. They actually, one of them, they tried to turn me into the captain, and we went to the captain, and the captain told him, get out, don't bother this man. He's doing a good job with his platoon, and leave him alone. So I was actually, acting lieutenant. So I went through these combat scenarios, and I've had, you know, there's a lot of action there in Pleiku in the Central Highlands, about 23 miles from the Cambodian border. And that's in the book. And some of the stories that I wrote in this book, Senseless Wars, I didn't want to get into a lot of the day-to-day combat stuff because we had combat almost every day, whether it be some sort of a firefight, mostly at night with the VC and the regulars, the NVA, we call them National Vietnam Army. They wore like suits that looked like our Confederate soldiers' suits. They were gray. So we can tell them apart, but also we know that the NVA were more organized and better and more well-equipped fighters. So when we faced them, we had a battle on our hands. The VC, they were hit and run, but we had those hit and run attacks a lot of times. And this can coincide also with the Angel book that I got that's in the publisher's hand. I was sitting there a couple of different times, and my men would look at me. We were sitting in a truck one time, and I went quiet. And Victor, you know this, being a spiritual person yourself, that if you want to hear the word of God or good advice, you go quiet and you listen. That's what I did. I sat there, and the guys were going crazy. So what are we going to do? What if we was getting hit? You know, rockets were landing all around us and everything. I sat there, and I thought, okay, should we, you know, jump off into the ditch and cover, take cover? And I said, no, we could get hit. I told the truck driver to floor it and the trucks to go fast and get back into the compound where we can get behind our bunkers. So they went crazy, but I went quiet. That was the first time I figured that something was talking to me. Something was telling me what to do. And that's where the angels are, the spiritual whispers that come into your mind. And that you kind of wake up real quick and you say, okay, here's what we're going to do. That happened to me a couple of times. We were getting hit really bad. And I was in the radio room in the bunker, and the dust and smoke was flying, was getting hit really heavy. The lieutenant ran on me. This is in the book. He ran. He got scared and he ran. So left me in charge. And the colonel was on the other line. I was calling in artillery. And so it's the first time I ever called in artillery. So I stood there and I listened. I went quiet. And the radio operator was sitting there. And he said, what's wrong with you? He said, you're quiet. And I just looked over at him. I didn't say anything. And I thought, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I told the colonel to fire one round for effect. And I'd run, landed, and I'd call it in on grids. And it'd come in, yards at a time. And then I brought it in so close that the colonel said, if you kill anybody, I'm going to come and shoot you. I said, no, sir. I said, let them fly. So I told all my guys, lay low. So they hit us for about 10 minutes with artillery, large rounds. I mean, the earth was shaking, but I think I saved a lot of the people on that line from being attacked from the NVA, the regular army, because it was heading our way. We got word that. So I think that artillery kind of made them shift their direction, and they went somewhere else. So I think I was gifted by an angel or spiritual words of advice in combat. And I'll never forget that. And those are things that stick to me more than just firing a gun all night and being gunpowder all in my face and my whole face being black and oily from the M60s and the M16s and things that we fired. So that in itself was more, grabbing of the spirit that I come through Vietnam like that. And when I come in, I think I told the story, and I think you mentioned it prior to the show, that when I first come into Vietnam on a big jumbo jet, there must have been close to 300 of us on the ship, on the plane. We landed at Quy Nhon, and we taxied on the runway, and we saw these, little cargo trucks that they haul a chain of flat, cargo thing, cargo flat, I don't know what they call them, but they put cargo on these flat rollers. Now, he was taking them to a jumbo jet with a military jumbo jet with a back door down, and they were loading all these aluminum caskets with American flags draped over them. This is the first sight that I saw. Everybody in that bus, there was about three buses or four buses, but everybody in that bus, we all stopped and we looked. And I just, right then and there, for about, I guess, 2 minutes, we just sat there and looked. And the sergeant was in charge of the bus. He said, "You see that?" He said, "That's what happens to you when you get your head up your butt." I didn't like that remark because these guys were heroes to me. They died fighting. And that's the first thing I saw in it. I wrote a paper on that in my first year college, and the instructor told me I should keep writing because that story was very touching. And so that's why I wanted to put that in the book, Victor.
Your book is called Senseless Wars and Conflicts as right. Perceived by a Combat Veteran. And in the book, you share that writing this was on your bucket list. Why and what inspired you to write this more than 50 years after your service in Vietnam?
Well, Victor, you can actually say that about my first book, the UFO book. I had my encounter at 13 years of age, my first one, the second one at 14, and I waited all that time. I think there was something to that. I've had people throughout the years, last 20 years, tell me I should write a book, and I finally did it because I think I had my ledger full. And in 2010, 2011, 2012 were big years, huge years for my UFO experiences for some reason. And after those years, I knew then that I had enough to put in there. And then I had actually aliens in my house 2.5 years ago, and I had pictures of them on my trail camera, infrared. They were setting off my alarms, and that's why I knew something was visiting my house, and I put the camera out the next day. Linda Moulton Hall asked me that question one day. Why did you have your trail camera out on the kitchen table? I said, well, because my alarms were going crazy the night before, and I knew they were coming here visiting. So something was setting them off all night long, and it wasn't a burglar. So I think it's a culmination of having all the information that I needed to write my book. But ago when I started writing, I never knew I was going to be a writer, Victor. That's another thing, too. I waited because I knew that writing was not my thing. I didn't even like English 1 or English 2 or literature in college. Although I did well in them, I still didn't like the writing and being, you know, do these sentence diagrams and everything. I can't do a sentence diagram. I told my friends last night. I said, I can write a book, but I can't do sentence diagrams. So it was a bucket list. So the Senseless Wars and the UFO book and also the Angel book coming up, there's a reason. I felt like I was supposed to. I had some actual freezing episodes the last 6 years. They happen almost every year about the same time in August. This past year, I didn't have that, but I had an out-of-body experience where I was floating above my body. So that must have been the seventh visit that I had. After that, I said, something's trying to tell me something. They're trying to tell me that I need to do something. And actually, I think the ETs and also the Senseless Wars book is for enlightening people. And I want to do that before I want to burn out. I don't want to smoke out. You know, I'm way past retirement now, but I want to keep busy in my semi-retirement. But I'm writing the books because there's a message of things that I've learned from ETs, UFOs, and from war, and from angels, and spiritual. Those are my bucket list books. I wanted to get those out to help people and enlighten them and let them see what I've seen and know. And you know it yourself, Victor, you're a very spiritual person, that there is another side. We our souls go somewhere else. And I know that because I've been on the other side dimensionally with some of these abductions, and they've taken me there. And I know that there's other sides to dimensions and where we go. There's a lot of, you know, talk about heaven and hell, but I don't think there's really a hell. I think it's there's a lot of reincarnation that is talked about, you know, through ETs, and then even a lot of people that are church or spiritually minded, they will accept reincarnation. But a lot of people that are really involved in a church or religion, no, they don't accept ETs. I've had people turn their heads on me about that. But I think we should actually take a look and not only at the ETs and know that they exist and disclosure is coming, but we also should take a look at the wars that we've been fighting. And this is what this book's about. I mentioned Iraq, Afghanistan. I mentioned Grenada and all these wars that we've lost so much blood and treasure. I mean, we spent, I guess, a couple of trillion dollars in the Middle East, in Afghanistan and Iraq, and we lost something like 4,800 people in those wars. Not the losses that we had in Vietnam, like 58,000. This is close to 5,000, probably more, but the numbers aren't really all added up. But these are wars that I guess we have better equipment. Back in the Vietnam War, we didn't have the equipment we have today that the soldiers, and even some of the soldiers, the Iraqi soldiers tell me when they come back, they said they were fed well. They even get steaks every once in a while. And in Vietnam, we didn't eat hot meals because our mess hall always got blown up in Vietnam. So we didn't have hot meals. We had to eat sea rations and things of that nature. And that's what we fed on.
And let's talk a little bit more about senseless wars and conflicts. And then in the next segment, we'll talk more on the UFO contact and also the angels that you're writing about. Why did you choose to enlist at a time when the war in Vietnam was not looked upon favorably by many of our fellow citizens?
Well, that's where I had a difference of opinion. My dad was a combat veteran of World War II. My uncle served in the military. I guess you could say we were used to the military life through our family's generations. But I chose to join because I was going to be drafted. Would I rather be rich or my folks be rich where they can send me to college to be a lawyer? I always had a hankering to be a lawyer, and I should have. I should have went on, but I also turned down a football scholarship to play music because I was playing music with my friends and my brother, and we were making a decent weekend living on that. But I chose to join because earlier, like I said, I got the school of my choice. And knowing that there was protest against the war, I looked down on the protesters at that time. This is before I kind of changed my mind a few years later. I looked at the protesters, John Kerry. I got him in my book where he was a Vietnam veteran. He's supposed to have been, he got medals, and I don't believe he deserved them from what all indication. He come back and he was a crybaby. He got a lot of these veterans with that lost their legs, and he had them in wheelchairs rolling down the street in these anti-war things, but this was all political. And in my book, I mentioned it was politics, just like we have nowadays. The Democrats back in 68, 69 had the news media in their back pocket, just like they do now. And since we had a Republican president, Nixon, in their time when I went in, they were always on him. They would just do the opposite of what the Republicans wanted to do. So that's what stirred up a lot of the animosity. They come back about, killing babies and things of that nature. We didn't do that, Victor. I saw the VC kill people, and we would drive by, and there'd be lines of bodies of these villagers, kids, women, pregnant women that we would see. And we would help with the bodies a lot of times and wait for the relatives to come by and pick up their bodies. But we didn't kill villagers. Now, accidentally with artillery, maybe planes. Yes, that happens. Those are casualties of war. That happens. But we didn't directly go after and do that. But so these people back here were demonstrating because they were politically motivated, and they were set on fire by the media saying that we were baby killers. We couldn't come back. We had to come back at night when there's nobody around could demonstrate against us. So I felt like we all talked about it. And before I went in, gung-ho, very patriotic. I was a young man, full of patriotism, and I was a strong young man. I could play football. And so I figured I could handle myself pretty well. So I went into service, and I didn't like these protesters. I thought we were serving our country, but to come to find out, these protesters were correct. They were right about the war, any war that I see. After serving this war, I thought to myself, I don't want to. And I didn't. They offered me a commission at the end of my 3 years. They were going to give me a lieutenant, a field commission. And I said, no, I don't want it. I just want to take my discharge and go. So I did. After 3 years, I just left. So that's the frustration that I had. And I found out the people protesting were correct. And I finally found that out myself. And in the book, I talk about that. I have an essay on academia.edu. I put an essay there. It's Revisiting Senseless Wars. I get into the diplomacy part of it. Henry Kissinger. I took a lot of information from his book, a 900-page book, and boy, was that a monster to research, Victor. I tell you, I researched it and compared it with my notes, and I put it in the essay to try to look at both sides of the diplomacy part and the combat part. There are two sides. There's negotiation, diplomacy. There's people like they can control the movement of any war, and. But I went in because I was just a patriotic young man, and I thought maybe my dad and everybody else that served that I was being a good boy.
And as we say to each other as brothers, thank you for your service.
Thank you, Victor. Thank you.
My guest is Dave Emmons. His book, Senseless Wars and Conflicts as Perceived by a Combat Veteran. Dave, please share with our listeners where they can get this very moving book and find out more about you and all of your work.
They can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kindle, Roku. There's several other, a whole list of them. I should have a list, about eight lists of my one publisher, Hanger One. Publisher, and which these guys have been great to me. Actually, one of the owner of it, he's Doug Hijacek, and it's Alex's son who's the editor. But he produces Monster Quest and a lot of TV shows. So he's into this type of genre of the UFOs and ETs and things. And that's why they didn't take the Senseless Wars. But if they can get all this at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kindle, there's an ebook out on it. So they can do that and look up those. And on Hanger One, they can go to Hanger One Publishing website, or they can go to my website that I have on academia.edu and look up Dave D. Emmons. And they can find my essay there and find some of my works on there.
And we'll be back with more of Dave Emmons after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week, Dave Emmons, his new book, Senseless Wars and Conflicts, as Perceived by a Combat Veteran. Dave, what were some of the feelings engendered by your American brothers in arms, the ROK Army soldiers from Korea that were fighting alongside you, and the Vietnamese soldiers that you shared this experience with?
Well, I can tell you, we were in Pleiku. We had Korean soldiers, ROK soldiers, we called them. They were with us. They were really friendly with us. They couldn't speak our language a lot. They served sometimes outside of our perimeters, and we had a no-fire zone when they were there because they were on forward positions. So we had to be careful. We had to coordinate a lot. One of the things I remember about the Korean soldiers is they fought. I mean, they were good fighters. I have to admit that, and I was glad to serve with them. I actually rode in trucks with them, went to certain places with them, and they were nice. The only thing I didn't like is they tried to trade off their sea rations for our sea rations, and they had fish heads and rice. And I looked at it and said, no, thanks. That's okay. And I give them a box or two of my rations, and I said, here, have these. I said, I don't want those. That's fine. I said, no offense, but fish heads I'm not into. So that was just a memory, kind of a funny memory I had of. But they were fine soldiers. They were really, really good soldiers to work with. We didn't work with them real close, but we ran into them. We shared operations a few times. Now, the South Vietnamese soldiers, we didn't have a real favorable opinion about South Vietnamese soldiers. We we heard a lot of times, I didn't fight with them a lot. They fought on their own. They had their own units and battalions. We would sometimes send a group of soldiers with them as trainers and as, you know, trying to lead them in a fight. A lot of times we'd have special units to do that with them. But we always heard, we had to give them respect because we were told if we did anything to the South Vietnamese soldier that we would be, you know, we would get an Article 15 or even more at that. We'd be thrown in a brig. So they said, you have to, you know, you have to give these South Vietnamese soldiers a little breathing room. We said, okay, fine. I didn't mind. They were nice to us and everything. I only ran into one that wasn't a South Vietnamese soldier. That was the problem with South Vietnamese soldiers. They didn't have a good identification process. They didn't have IDs or they didn't have dog tags. A lot of times they were not registered. So we didn't know if they were really soldiers or not. The NVA would infiltrate them. They actually knew English language. And we got one in our van one time, and we were heading back to our camp, and we picked him up, and he got in. And this story is in the book, Senseless Wars. I was in the back seat. I had a sergeant driving and another sergeant on the other side of the passenger side. And he gets in, and I look at the bag he had. It was kind of a cloth bag. I can see squares, and I knew what that was. That was C4 explosives, and I knew that's what that was. And I saw he had a bulge in his pants, in his belt area, had a shirt covering it. And I looked at him. He started asking a lot of questions. He said, you have, what, 60,000 men here with the 4th Division? He said, but most of them are operating up north. I said, no. What he was trying to do is find out where the weak spots were at so they can hit them. I said, oh, no. I said, we got more than 60,000 here. I said, this whole northern territory, I said, we must have at least 100,000 soldiers. He kind of looks at me, and he knew I was fluffing things for him. So, I got the gist that he was a spy. He didn't seem like to have any identification or anything. He had a South Vietnamese, uniform on, but that's about it. And when I noticed that he was asking too many questions, I had an M14 rifle at the time. I told the sergeant I didn't want to lock and load in the car because I was afraid he'd pull that pistol out. I wouldn't have enough time to, you know, I didn't have my rifle locked and loaded with a magazine. So I stepped out. I asked him, and the sergeant come out and he says, "What's wrong with you, Dave?" I said, "This guy is a hot. He's not real." He said, "Yeah." He said, "I know. I've been listening to some of the questions you've been going back and forth with." And I said, "Well, he's a South Vietnamese soldier, so I have to try to respect that. But I think we need to save our lives in this vehicle." And I took my flak jacket off, and that's what I wanted to do. And I locked and loaded my rifle, and I put a round in the chamber, and I got back in, and I laid the rifle on his shoulder, and I told him, I said, "Do you know what one of these can do to you?" It was an M14. It's a larger caliber than actually the .223 round of the M16. And he just kind of looks at me and he reaches like for his pistol. He had a Chinese 9 on him, and he was reaching for it. I said, "Don't reach for that." I said, "Don't reach for that." I said, "I'll blow your head off." And he just looked scared looking. And then as I went on and we kept driving, he tried to reach for his pistol again. And then that's when I slammed his head up against the window of the van, and I had my, you know, the rifle right in his chin, actually. And I said, "Do it again." I said, "I'm going to blow your head off." And then I told the sergeant, I said, "Stop." I said, "He's getting out." See, I didn't want to deal with him. A lot of people ask me, "Well, why didn't you do something about it?" Well, here's the thing. Like I said, they couldn't prove who they really were. You know, they didn't have a list or anything like we did, like identification. So he could have said he's a South Vietnamese soldier, and he could have lied to my command, and I could have been in trouble. But I knew what he was, and the other two guys knew what he was too. So I told him, I said, "Get out, hold your one hand up in the air, keep your bag in your hand." And I said, "And I'm going to drive away, but if you reach for that gun," I said, you're gone. So we pulled away real slow, and I kept the door open and left him behind. And a lot of people say, "Well, why do that?" Well, like I said, we couldn't identify them even if we took them into the command post. Did that with kids too. We had some kids that got on the back of a truck, and I had a driver that was kind of rude and mean. He threw these kids off the back of the truck because they thought we had things that we were throwing away that they would want. And so he threw this one kid off, and he hit pretty hard. I asked him, I said, why did you do that? And I said, next time you do that, I said, you're going to the brig. And I was his sergeant. So we got in the truck, and the same kid opened fire on our truck, and the bullets hit the side of the truck. And I said, speed off, get out of here. He said, let's go back and kill him. I said, no. I said, that could be a trap. There's probably many more out there in that grass waiting for us to do that. And I said, no, let's just get out of here. I don't want to kill those kids. You offended those kids. I said, they were just hungry, looking for food. I said, no, I don't want to go back and kill them. So that's what I mean, Victor. There's a little bit of humanity in everybody. In me, I had a lot. I respected life, and I didn't want to take a life unless I had to.
What did it feel like when your tour of duty ended for you and your sisters and brothers in service?
When my 3 years discharge come along, yes. I come home, and I think after the about 11 months, I had 11 months to serve after Vietnam, and I was at Fort Benning. I was a control room sergeant. I was a morning report clerk. Had a real ploish job. I mean, I'd work about 2-3 hours in the morning, and that was it. I grew my hair long, and I stayed away from inspections, and the captain let me do anything I wanted. But I had a nice 11 months in the end. But when I got done, I think I succumbed to the bitterness of war. I also saw the senselessness of it, just like the book. I come home, and I went to my parents' house. I took off my uniform, which was all decked out. I mean, I took it off and threw it in the floor, and I walked over it. I'm sorry, but that's what I did. I just showed my parents that I didn't like what I did. I'm done with the war, and I didn't want to. That's why I didn't stay in and take that lieutenant rating. If it wasn't for the war, I probably would have taken a commission. But I just lost my gumption for fighting and killing people. And I thought wars were, that's why I wrote this book. I wanted people to know that it's senseless to fight and kill each other. And I keep looking at this Russian-Ukraine thing, and I keep thinking, my God, these people, these poor people, why do we have to do it? I think it's the elites, the rich, and I talk about the cabal. I talk about the military-industrial complex. They want wars because they make money. They make money at war. And guess who fights the wars? The poor guy, the poor woman. They fight the wars. And it's the elites. It's always been that way throughout history. And the kings in England and Spain, France, if they got mad at another king, they would send all their peasants to fight the wars, and all the peasants would die. They'd get all the riches. All the riches would go to their castle. So it doesn't make sense for the poor man to fight a rich man's war. And that's what happened in Vietnam. It was all about the money. And it's in every war, Iraq, Afghanistan, it was all about the money. Why couldn't we just hit and do a payback and then pull back out and don't put any boots on the ground? We have technology now. We don't need to put boots on the ground and kill these poor soldiers.
So who's raking in the riches from these wars?
It's the people that are making military contracts. It's people who build the planes, who build the artillery, who build the tanks. These are the people at the top of the corporations that are making this money, and big banks are making money. It was said back in Vietnam that President Johnson, his wife Lady Bird, her family owned a big shipping company. They did boat shipping, they did trucking. So what they did is when Vietnam come along, they got a lot of military contracts for shipping a lot of equipment over to Vietnam and shipping across the country to California to be shipped out also on trucks. So they had a lot to do with making money also. So it's actually the politicians. You can take a look at the politicians nowadays. You know, they walk out a lot of times with these lobbyists. They got money stuffed in their back pockets. And a lot of them are committed to these elites, what they call deep state elite. Even the CIA get involved in starting wars. We do we're guilty of a lot of things in the world. We're not, our hands are not clean by no means. Is there a direction or is there a reason for it? We don't know. We don't know all the reasons for it. It's just like when I read the book from Henry Kissinger, you know, about diplomacy. It talks about that, and they're all reaching for this new world order. The elites, the rich families, 13 big rich families. You know, you take the Rothschilds, you know, the Rockefellers, and all these people. They meet in Europe once a year, and you know, they are the ones running the world. And actually, the Vatican, you know, it actually is rich, and they actually have something to do with running the world since 1666. This story is in my new book, Angels, but it's something that I talk around it, but I didn't get directly involved in. But since 1666, actually, the Pope was kind of in charge, and the kings would come to the Pope and take their orders actually from the Pope. And the Pope had the riches. They have this library in the secret underground area, which they have a lot of information, a lot of knowledge they will not release to people. So our history is actually hidden from us. And the elites that run this world, there's more to it than that. There's also ETs. There's four races of ETs that are involved in working with us. They actually communicate with them underground. They have these underground bases and networks that they work with. And I don't want to go into the human trafficking. It gets a little ugly, but that happens also, Victor.
Dave, are we at war with ourselves right now?
Yes, we are. We're in this country that's 50-50. You have the Democrat liberals and you have the Republicans. We are split. We're a divided nation. And other countries are the same way. Take Canada, the trouble they're having there. And even in Australia, in France, all the demonstrations they've been having. Our whole world, there's something that I guess it could be sci-fi or whatever, but I heard that there's machinery in Antarctica that gives off these frequencies that they can control all the people in the world just by frequencies alone. And a lot of times this can be caused by these frequencies that get people all riled up and get the world in chaos. We're in chaos right now. You can see that some of these politicians are very blind and they're turning a blind eye because I think they're either paid off or they're being blackmailed. What I'm saying blackmailed is some of them they've got videos on them doing wrong things. And I don't want to get into that either because I don't know that for sure, but this is what I heard. Let's mention one name, Jeffrey Epstein. There was a lot of blackmailing going on there with a lot of leaders, past leaders, politicians, and also movie stars and people around the world. Even in Europe, the kingdom there was involved in some of this. So it's a corrupt world, and that's why we're divided. We have the elites who are running the world. We have no idea. We're just little peons, Victor. We're kind of like slaves, like we've been enslaving all of our thousands of years. We've had kings and people ruling us, and it's always the poor man that does all the heavy lifting and the fighting and dying.
And what would be the solution in your mind?
We're getting there. A lot of people are talking about going from the third dimension to the fifth dimension, where the frequencies will change. And I heard talk this year that there might be an open disclosure from ETs. And of course, people can't be laughing about that too much because right now the Pentagon agrees that there are UFOs or UAPs, as they call them, that there's a lot of them, and their military, their pilots are seeing all these things. They're concerned about mid-air collisions, but there hasn't really been a mid-air collision from what they say. They know this about the ETs. They also, the real top secret, above top secret is what I'm talking about. These people communicate with ETs. We are more into space than what we know. We have secret space programs. Everybody's been hearing whispers about that. We've been traveling to Mars and the moon quite often. And I think it's because the tie-in with the ETs and our human technology, and that's helping us advance faster. But we as average person, we don't see that. They keep a lot from us. I actually think there's a lot of cures, like for cancer, but they don't want us to keep increasing. Actually, you got like Bill Gates and a lot of these other billionaires. I have to give Elon Musk credit. He doesn't get involved with a lot of billionaires and trying to depopulate the world. They're saying that we need to depopulate by 50%. And so that's a lot of times why we have cures for a lot of these ailments, but they don't want to put them out there. I really don't trust what's going on. Our history is not, you probably know a little bit about that we don't, you know, a lot of the stuff I'm talking about, but I know that some of this is out there. I know, but you have to kind of have a consciousness to catch on to what is really going on. And I think enlightenment, and that's why I've been writing my books, is for enlightenment. And it's actually my lessons that I've learned that I want to hand down to people, like ETs, war, angels, and there's another spiritual side to us, is what I want to project in this third book, and which will be out in probably a couple of months. The publisher's working with it now. But it goes into a lot of different spiritual things, just like you and what you do in your life and what you do, the spiritualism that you have. And that's why I enjoy talking to you, Victor.
And when we come back in the next segment, we'll be talking about that next book. My guest is Dave Emmons. His latest book, Senseless Wars and Conflicts as Perceived by a Combat Veteran, will be back after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hey, Dad, your prescription will be ready in just a minute. Hey, Dad, your laundry will be ready in just a minute. Dad, your lunch will be ready in just a minute.
Hey, honey, why don't you take a minute?
When you help care for a loved one, you give them as much time as you can. But it's just as important to take time for yourself. AARP can help. Find free care guides to support you and your loved one at aarp.org/caregiving. That's aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week, Dave Emmons. We were talking about his book, Senseless Wars and Conflicts. Dave, last time you were on, we were talking about your book, They, What They Want, talking about your ET and contact experiences. Have you had any recent experiences?
Yes, Victor. Real quick summary. I've seen 6 up-close UFOs up close where I can actually tell what they look like. And I've been nabbed by a few of them. And I've seen 3 ETs consciously, met 3 ETs face-to-face consciously. And I've had lucid dreams, regressed dreams, very vivid lucid dreams with seeing 3 or 4 other ETs that I was on ship with. So that tells me, you know, a lot of my experiences in this book. The latest thing that's been going on with me, of course, I had 2.5 years ago, I had these ETs in my house, and I talked about that, having them filmed on my infrared trail camera after they set my alarms off. But I've been having these freezing bouts the last few years, and every year I have it about the same time. I get really frozen about 3 o'clock in the morning, and my hands are put across my belt line like I'm in a casket. And I wake up and I'm freezing. I'm shaking the whole bed. And mind you, my wife did not wake up in any of these 6 events, 6 years in a row, almost on the same date in August, one time in January. And this year I had an out-of-body experience, but I was on these occasions, I would just freeze and shake the whole bed. And I was kind of wasn't thinking anything. I was just mindless. I got up out of bed, went to the bathroom, come back, got in and went into the covers. And then I was so exhausted that I just fell asleep. But I do remember the event, and I even asked my wife. She never heard anything. And normally she'll hear my cell phone drop off of the nightstand and fall on the carpet. And it just makes a little thud, and she hears that. She said, "What's that?" And I knew they put her out. And I must have went to another dimension. So when I was completely erased, though. I haven't had any regressed dreams. I've been waiting for it. But I think there's a sign that I'm getting from them to do what I'm doing. And finally, I started doing it a year and 2 months ago. I started writing, and they, and now Senseless Wars, and now the new book, Angels. I can't get into a lot of that because it's got to be copyrighted still from the publisher. But I did all this because, the messages I was getting. I'm getting other messages now, too, paranormal. And a lot of people might have these same things. And you said something to me about a synchronicity too, Victor, but I have a TV problem. We play the sleepy time music. It's real nice music, and we play it low, and it kind of helps us sleep. My wife and I, we both enjoy that, and we'll turn it off in the morning when we wake up, or if I'm in a bedroom and I'm watching, I'll turn on the news real quick, see the daily news. But this thing will change channels, and the remote's 4 feet away from me, so I have to reach way over to get it. And so it's not within my reach or bump into it. The channel changes from 947, it's a cable channels, and then it goes to 48 most of the time. The other morning it went to 47, a channel we don't have. I had to laugh about that. And I said, "Hey, you spook, or you ET, you got it wrong this time." But it's almost every morning, about 7:30. It's when I wake up and I become conscious. And I think the channel changes. It's reading my mind. Something's reading my mind. I have these little cat balls. I was explaining to you. They call them cat balls, or they're paranormal balls, and they'll light up. And they have little lights that circle. They're circular, and it shines different colored lights. And when they're touched, they'll go off. Or when something gets really near them, they'll go off. And while I was writing my fourth book, I started my fourth book, and which is going to be a sci-fi book, a storybook, and it's going to be taken from one of my stories in They. And when I started writing that book, I have this ball that's sitting about 6 feet away from me on another table in my office. And this ball starts lighting up on its own, and it keeps lighting up. It keeps going. It goes in 5 second cycles. And I was writing the book, and I keep looking over, and it's actually telling me I'm going in the right direction. This, some people can call them angels. I can call them maybe ETs. We actually don't know what these are, because angels, ghosts, ETs, and even Bigfoot and others, these are dimensional entities. They come in and come out of our world. We have like four races here on Earth. They're underground. We have underground ETs, but we have most of them come from other portals, other dimensions, and they come into us. But I can say that it could be my angels telling me to keep doing what I'm doing, keep writing these books, keep doing your radio shows, and getting the word out there and enlighten people. The word is consciousness and enlightenment. And that's why I think I'm getting these signs. You know, I get paranormal and synchronicity signs all the time. I can't think of all the little things, but the big thing now is the TV. It keeps doing that. And these balls light up whenever I start writing my fourth book. So it's telling me this is what they want me to do. And of course, I sometimes get these feelings. I had a dream, about 5-6 days ago, I had a dream of flying. And this is the first time I had a dream of flying for a long time. I was up over a street, my old street that I lived on, and I was up in the air, and I felt really great. I felt, you know, weightless, and the wind was breezy, and then I traveled. I took off and I went traveling. I ended up in a place where there was humanoids or somebody, a group of people. I could hear some of the noise or chatter, and I was kind of like a guest. Maybe I was invisible traveling, spiritually, whatever. And I saw this, and then all of a sudden I come back. And when I come back into my bed, my left ear was throbbing real fast, like a heart rate, but it was faster than my heart rate. And I thought, what's going on? And I went to the bathroom, and it stopped. The ear quit throbbing. That ear was throbbing because I think I have an implant in the left ear. I can touch my two front teeth with my tongue, and the left ear will start ringing. And I tell my doctors this. I've been to three doctors, and I have a real sharp, she's real smart. And I ask her about it. And she says, I can't explain that. She said, I don't know what's going on there. And so it could be an implant in my left ear. And I know I got an implant in my left hand. You know about that. And I've taken out, I guess, two implants from my body. And I've got one, I think, still in and one in my left ear. And another person I talked to had an implant in their right ear. So it happens. And I don't know how they do it. I guess their technology way far in advance. But I can read minds a lot of times. I can send signals to my wife. I can send like something that I want or need, and she'll ask me. She'll say, "You want this, don't you?" And I said, "Well, yeah." You know, it's increasing my awareness, whatever is going on, the synchronicities and everything that's keeping track of me. And I've had these apports, and I keep them. I got them in a box that I've been receiving from the other side somehow or another. These little gifts they give you, and they even put them in your pocket, and I keep them as souvenirs. But those are apports. And I did a show with Grant Cameron one time about the apports. So they are talking to us, and I'm trying. And that's what's going on now after everything I've been through. And they want me to do what I'm doing. They want me to do the radio shows. I'm compelled to do it. A year and two months ago, I started writing the first book. It was challenging because it was my first book I ever wrote, and I was never a writer. So all of a sudden, even my friends told me, even last night, they said, "Wow, you started writing at an old age. And you just, you know," I said, "Well, I was compelled to do it, and something's pushing me." It's just like that little voice when I go quiet, like in combat, or even when I was at work at the refinery. I was a crew leader, and I had three guys that were very junior guys, and they didn't know what they were doing, and the plant could blow up. Everything went crazy. The board was lit up like a Christmas tree. And I sat there real quiet. And the board man looked at me and he screamed at me. He said, "We're going to die." He said, "You need to do something." So I went quiet. That happened about 10 years ago. And I just thought right away, I got up and I jumped. I ran right to the problem. And I didn't know what the problem really was. I come back in. I started making changes on the board. And most of the senior guys said, they come in, they said, this unit should be down. And I had it limping along about 50%, and they couldn't understand why it was still operating. And one guy that I knew really well, he looked me in the face and he thought it was really strange. He knew about my ET stuff, and may not be ETs. It could be angels. Like, that's why I wrote the book Angels, Victor.
And it could be angels, and it could be a combination of messengers,
right,
that you've been experiencing, that I've been experiencing throughout my life. Mm-hmm. And the lesson that I can share with our listeners right now is that what we're talking about is available to each and every one of us if we get quiet and really listen.
Yes, you're so right.
Absolutely. My guest, Dave Emmons, his latest book, Senseless Wars and Conflicts as Perceived by a Combat Veteran. Dave, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get this book, your book on UFOs, and which is called They, What They Want, and the next book, which we can't give the title out yet, but it's about angels.
Right. They can get They and Senseless Wars. They is by Hangar One Publishing. You can go on their website and order the book, or you can go to Amazon, Barnes and Noble, and Kindle. That's for both books. Senseless Wars is done by EBL Publishing, and you'll find that on the same Amazon, Barnes and Noble, and Kindle, and other platforms like Roku and a few others. My new book, it's going to be done in about a month or two. The publisher has it. I signed a contract. It's about angels, about the best I can say. And I cover everything a lot. Angels 101, if you don't know who angels were, their names. I even go into the Egyptian angels, in which they were a lot more spiritual than what we thought when I researched what they did. And they had gods, but their gods are actually our angels, well, archangels. They call them a different god. So you can see these religions and spirituality actually infused in different cultures all throughout the thousands of years. And that's why I went to the invisible, extraterrestrials because angels are invisible. Actually, Bigfoot is invisible and dimensional. So a lot of people might argue with that. But I have cryptids in this book, and I have ghosts in this book. I have biblical verses where even Jesus Christ spoke about ghosts. He went to Doubting Thomas, and he had disciples there when he arose, and he come back to visit them. And after the third day, he was standing there, and he told them, he said, this was kind of like a mess up, and actually in the Bible is kind of a contradictory. He said, you look as though you're seeing a ghost. Well, Jesus didn't really want to really say that, but then later on it was corrected in Matthew and Luke in those chapters. And so he was saying that ghosts don't really exist. They're talking about the spirit hangs around for 3 days to make sure the body's dead. But nowadays in modern times, when you die, they know, they have all this technology, and they embalm you and you're dead anyway. So that spirit's going to leave. That's why when I get embalmed, it's kind of funny thing. But when I get to it, I think I'm going to go for cremation. But I told my wife, I said, give me 3 days before I get cremated.
And very quickly, your website.
Yeah, website. You can go to academia.edu. That's a website I've got. It's Dave D. Emmons. You can look that up. I have an essay posted there, and I'll be posting other things at that. But you can also go to my EBL, and you can go to publishing, and you can go to Hangar One Publishing and look up the book there and the information.
Dave, always a pleasure to have you on and to hear you share your stories, because I resonate with much of what you say.
Thank you so much, Victor. And you're a great guy. And I hope everybody knows that.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us on Vox Novus. I'm Victor, the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.